Welcome to the Run Lift Mom podcast, where we're talking about running, lifting, and momming, not necessarily in that order. Today, I have with me Suze Lemick. Suze is the mom of two beautiful girls. One is a 27-weeker micro preemie that was born at under 2 pounds. I have brought Suze on to talk to me about her NICU experience with her daughter, and she does something that you will appreciate and find awesome. She relates her experience in the neonatal intensive care unit to running a marathon. As someone who has previous experience with both that 26.2 and 13.1, she's going to take us through the highs and lows of her personal journey. So without further ado, here is Suze Lemick. All right. Welcome, Suze Lemick, to the Run Lift Mom podcast. I am so thrilled to have you here. I have to tell folks, it's a little awkward for me to call you Suze because I have long referred to you as Super Suze.
Same.
And people will hear why I refer to you as such. But Suze, I want to go back about a decade where our friendship began, actually, appropriately for the Run Lift Mom podcast, with running. Do you mind giving me some of your background there?
So I started marathon training and running in 2008. I ran the Philly Marathon with my sorority sister. Fell in love as someone who had an eating disorder in my past because it was just like the best use of my body up until that point. Like I felt so strong and like it really made me look at nutrition very differently. And I loved that feeling. I loved the bling at the end. And so when I started University Directories with you, you know, it was well known that you were a marathoner and my territory included Kentucky and you were running in Kentucky. So we got to run that marathon, the Hatfield and McCoy together. And I love that. I think we had red capes that you got us.
We did. We really took the Super Suze theme to like an extreme. Yeah. And anyone who has done that race, I mean, Hatfield McCoy, it's tiny. I want to say like what 500 people do it, but you guys, there is this hill, this insane hill. And we had these capes that were like nylon bathing suit material, like not fancy, cut it off, like, you know, by the yard, kind of cost. And when that thing fills up with sweat on a hot, humid summer day and you're going, I think it's like Blackberry Hill. I almost took it off, but
I did take mine off. I feel
you're smart.
It was like having a backpack. I wasn't ready for it.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
I've ran 26 half and full marathons. I'm mostly for charity and I'm not a fast runner, but I love it. I like to run with the underdog. So that's kind of my running back. And I love to like the 45-year-old guy who's running his first marathon to prove to his wife he's still got it. Like, that's my people. Like, you know, I wear a fanny pack and we just mesh. So
as my teammate Kira says, it's party pace.
Yes. Yes. Definitely.
So wait, you said you've done total 26 full and half marathons.
Yes. And so five of those are full marathons. So mostly on the half marathon. I like that pace because you can still be a tourist and not, you know, suffer the next day.
You're not debilitated the next day and thinking the toilet is a long way down or anything like that.
Yeah.
Very good. Cool. So, I mean, obviously I didn't bring you here to reminisce about running, although, I mean, we can go there if you ever want to in the future. I brought you here to talk about your experience with your micro preemie and what goes into that as a parent in the NICU and after. Can you talk to me a little bit? There's a reason why I asked you about the running first. Can you tell me a little bit about how training for half and full marathons prepared you for your now motherhood journey?
So I truly believe that every single person, when you're like thinking about starting a family, you should run and train for a marathon and really train for a marathon, because that process, it just gives you a level of mental endurance that prepares you for so many other unknowns. So when we went through the process with Audrey, which she was born 13 weeks early, she was 1 pound, 13 ounces.
I want to pause there. She was 1 pound, 13 ounces.
Yes.
Okay.
So she's smaller than a Diet Coke bottle. as far as size. So if you like, or Diet Coke can, if you have a can of Diet Coke, I guess it could be any soda, but that's my reference. Like she was smaller than that for, quite a while. That was,
so a 27 weeker, less than 2 pounds.
Yes.
Wow.
And, so with Audrey, I had a pretty healthy pregnancy. I exercised regularly, but it was more so on the walking side because I was nervous. I really wanted to be just as careful as possible with this pregnancy. I had a miscarriage before. My daughter, Grace, was a totally normal pregnancy. She's 5 now. When Grace was 20 weeks, they found a marker on her brain that was for trisomy 19. And the doctors really sat down with us. We were at that appointment for maybe 3 hours. They wanted us to consider ending the pregnancy because of finding this marker. And we're Christian, and that was not an option for us. But it was a building block for my husband of what we could have to deal with road ahead. And when Grace was born, this perfectly beautiful 7 pounds, 11 ounces baby, we were like, okay, we've gone through the hardest part. So when we got pregnant with Audrey, we just expected smooth sailing. I was like, I'm going to drink kale smoothies every day. I'm going to go for long walks, but I'm going to take it easier as far as like the endurance, because I just want it to be as careful as possible. With her, we were relocating, and it was a very routine doctor's appointment. In fact, it was an almost unnecessarily scheduled doctor's appointment. I wanted to have all my paperwork ready to go for moving because I'm type A, and I like wanted to know every T was crossed, and I was dying.
Gotta control everything.
Yes, you know, like I just needed to know. So I go in, and Maggie's my nurse, and she takes my blood pressure, and my friend Kylie just told me this like horrifying small town murder story on my drive there. So she was like, your blood pressure is sky high. And I was like, no, let me tell you this story. You don't even understand. Like, this is like the deal. So they kept me there. They kept checking my blood pressure. And I thought, you guys are ridiculous. Like, this is so fun. Like, you know, this is totally fine. And my doctor came in, and she looked like Carmen Sandiego in a white lab coat. I just need you to picture like fierce, great shoes. Right.
And yeah.
And she had a real Southern accent, but she was like, darling, we're sending you to Northside Hospital. We got to take a ultrasound, make sure the baby's okay. And I want you to be prepared. You may be delivering her much sooner than you expect it.
So you're 27 weeks pregnant. You're going in weeks. For this appointment that you don't even think, I mean, it's like, whatever, I'll check the boxes. I'll get my papers.
Yeah.
And then they tell you, we're sending you to the big hospital and your baby could be coming today.
Yes. And they're sending me just me. It's not like my husband's with me. It's not like I prepared for this. I mean, like I'm wearing like the wrong bra for this situation. I just need you to know, like everything was like set up. So I was going to go to a business meeting afterwards. Like I was like, oh, okay. And the whole time I'm thinking, this isn't real. Like we're going to get there and they're going to be like, oh, you're fine. Don't worry. Move close to Chattanooga. It's fine. So they did the ultrasound and they said, we have to see if the baby's still alive. And that gutted me way more than I ever expected. And they check on her and she's okay.
This is after a miscarriage.
Yes.
This is a rainbow baby after a miscarriage.
Yes. And a miscarriage at 10 weeks. So we thought we were almost in the clear with that one. So we get the ultrasound. I'm still by myself. Like Chris is like trying to wrap up work so he can pick up Grace and meet me at the hospital. And, they say that they're going to be admitting me, but I have to go to a different section of labor and delivery. And I'm like driving myself, getting all this like chaotic news. And I'm just like, what is happening? And, the most incredible doctor, like he was really thoughtful, but he said, you're going to be a mother again before Friday. Like there's no way that we're going to get to Friday and you're not. And that was Wednesday. It was a Wednesday appointment. And they put me on all different kinds of medicine, like magnesium and a couple others for her lungs. And magnesium, any mom will tell you that goes through it, you feel like you have pneumonia. Like you feel like weak and like wheezy and just like the worst flu you've ever had, but like something else where you're like, what is happening? And they're like, if you can suffer through 3 days of this, it's very likely that your baby will have better respiratory system set up and their lungs will be able to survive better in the NICU.
So at this point, they're just trying to delay labor long enough to get those steroids into her lungs.
Yeah.
So she's set up for success.
Because it was extreme and sudden preeclampsia with no warning signs. And it was interesting because I gained 14 pounds in 1 week. So 14 pounds of fluid. And so I knew I was puffier, but like, I just thought it was like the stress of moving and maybe much Chick-fil-A. I mean, moving's stressful, you know?
Well, and let me remind folks that, you know, eclampsia is heightened blood pressure. And this is, we're talking to a marathon runner. I mean, you didn't own that many, races at that point, but quite a few. So like eclampsia, you probably weren't thinking of that.
Well, as a teenager, my blood pressure was too low. So I never thought that that was like real. Like, cause it was like, I mean, I like used to faint in high school and people would be like, oh my gosh, cause it was so low. So like never thought it was real. So we get admitted to the hospital. We have many more visitors than normal because we have our real estate agents visiting us to sign off on paperwork. We have my attorney visiting us to set up the power of attorney so Chris can sign off on the mortgage and the house buying. People think I'm a celebrity. It's kind of funny, but because like I had so many people coming. We had this like guy come at 11 o'clock at night to notarize legal papers. Meanwhile, I'm like in the hospital gown, right? Like so pregnant, just gained 14 pounds in a week, like not my best self, having all these visitors. So that was the experience. And then we got through the 3 days and the doctor came to check and he said, okay, at 12 o'clock, we're going to do an emergency C-section. She can't stay in there any longer. And with Grace, I had 2 failed epidurals. I actually called the hospital and they tried to bill me $1,800 for the epidurals. And I was like, you know how Olive Garden like doesn't get to charge you if you didn't get your meal? Like I had 2 failed epidurals. Like, can we talk about this? I can't get out of it, just a side note. But I was really scared about a C-section because I was scared I would have failed epidurals with it. And the doctors and nurses come in. And it was an out-of-body experience. You know how, like, on TV shows, it's like the heart plays and you see yourself above yourself. That was my whole C-section experience. But it was the cast of General Hospital. Everybody was super attractive. And I made sure that they drugged me really well because this fear. So I was high as a kite, and I would tell them, oh, my God. My mom would be so excited that Brenda's going to be part of my C-section because we watched General Hospital growing up. The most unreal experience where you're just like, what is happening? But so I make light of it because it was so traumatic, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, so, Carmen Sandiego is delivering the news and then she sends you to the cast of General Hospital.
I want you to feel like you were there. Yeah.
I can picture it.
So, we go to have the emergency C-section the day before closing on our new house. So Chris is able to be with me, but he has to leave at 3 o'clock. So they only have so much time with him in the room before he has to leave to do things for moving. Cause we moved 2.5 hours north. And so we have the C-section. I imagine it's like how most people have C-sections, but when they put the baby on me, it felt like a tree frog. Because her skin was so underdeveloped, and that's about how the size that she was. And we didn't go to the NICU that night. We didn't see her. We didn't go. I was in really rough shape. They kept taking my blood pressure. It kept going up and elevating well above 200, 220. It was just really increasing a lot. So they were worried about me. And
so were you still on a magnesium line at that point?
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
So, but they gave me the fentanyl power pack. And that was the only way that I was getting through that night because it was just immense amount of pain and pressure and like pressure in my skin. It was a really weird feeling. So we went to see Audrey that next day. and they're, the NICU is like, I imagine if you're like first got to visit Star Trek, because there's like space capsules and right. so much machinery and alarms and buzzers, and everybody's super serious. And they, you know, tell you to wash your hands with this soap that like, you will never forget the soap, the way it smells when you're done your NICU stay, even if you're only there for a couple of days, it's so sterile. And we went and we saw her, and at this point she had lost a little bit of weight. So she was even smaller than 1 pound, 13 ounces, and she was stable. And, I got discharged from the hospital after, 3 days. And the, it was Grace's birthday. So Grace's birthday is 4 days after Audrey. It was like day before, and the doctor came in and she said, "You're ready to go home. You're so strong." And I said, "Well, my home's 2.5 hours north. Like, I don't want to leave my baby. Like, can I just stay a couple more days?" Like, because we just didn't know what the road ahead was. Everyone told us that there was no way she was going to come home before 10 weeks in the NICU. Normally babies come home at their due date. And right. so, my doctor, her last name was Butts, and that was like the only thing that I could like have as like a haha, because she was like, "Well, your, you know, your other daughter's birthday's tomorrow. You know, I always got balloons and filled the room for my kids on their birthday." And it was like, I can't go to Dollar General and get balloons. I just had a C-section and I have to drive 2.5 hours north.
Yeah. Like,
and my baby's here. My baby's in the hospital. So
right.
I got discharged, but we decided to stay at a hospital or a hotel right next door, because I want it to be close. And my parents had hotel points, so they hooked us up. We stayed at the hotel right next door.
I want to pause for a second there. So Audrey is what we consider a micro preemie, meaning she's born under 28 weeks. And you discussed, of course, that feeling of having this small, tiny, little cold baby. And then she goes to the NICU. I want to pause here because I've had this experience as well. Can you speak to how... to how it feels to leave the hospital without your baby?
It's like leaving without your arm, or I mean, it's the hardest experience I could possibly imagine. And they give you like a phone number that's like your baby's isolate. Like, this is like how you contact your baby.
Your baby Star Trek pod with yeah, all the staff around it.
You know, and, I think it would have been different if it wasn't like, you know, a 2.5 hour drive, but
right.
So it would be like, you know, if my baby was in Philadelphia and I was in Manhattan, like, you know, like, I mean, it's more than a yeah. commute, you know?
And did you feel kind of that pull between, okay, I've got Audrey here in the NICU in this hospital, but then I've got Grace, who at the time, was she turning 3?
She was turning 3, and my parents had come up to take care of her. And my parents have had 7 kids, so they're super hands-on. But they're also older. They're in their like later 60s, now 70s, going to be 70. And so it's not the same as mommy and daddy. It's not the same schedule. It's not the same, you know, meal plan, anything like that. So, like, any mom feels a certain way when you aren't able to take care of your kid, and they're also, like, not getting – you know, the normal schedule and what you would do. But then when you have that, and then you have another baby 2.5 hours away in Atlanta. And they told me the number one thing for me to do was pumping. Like, I had to pump for my baby. They like stressed that so much. So I was pumping every 2 to 3 hours through the night. I would have alarms go off at all times. So I was just drained, and I've never had a maternity leave, so I was also still working. So I was still sending out contracts and having client calls while managing Grace, while managing our move. We moved into a house that didn't have any of our linens because we couldn't find the box for 2 weeks. So, like, we had Walmart linens on everything. It was a crazy time. And then, so Audrey being a micro preemie, she was high risk for a lot of things. But the night that we were at the hotel, she got very sick lungs very, very quickly. And I was pumping every 2 hours, so I just pumped at like 2 o'clock. And the hospital called at 3:30, and I missed the call because I was sleeping. but they were calling for approval to do emergency resuscitation and chest tubes. And I woke up for my 4:30 pump, and I got the message and felt like the worst mom in the world because I didn't get the, you know, call and everything. And then I had to pump for 15 minutes before I could go to the hospital because, like, it was like, you know, Pamela Anderson, ridiculous. And we go, and they, everything that they were saying was just talking about survival rates. And I never prepared for that conversation because my whole pregnancy, I just knew I had to get to 27 weeks because when you, at 27 weeks, you have a 90 percentile to survive. And so having had a miscarriage, I was very set on 27 weeks. So when I got to 27 weeks with her, I still felt like things would be fine. But she required a lot of respiratory care. She had the chest tubes for 2.5 weeks. She had to have her own fentanyl drip. So she became addicted to fentanyl and then had to be weaned off of it. And the weaning was very difficult. And so it's, the NICU is a marathon for so many reasons. The NICU is a marathon because you are up against time. You're up against, you know, the obstacles that are set up there. You're also in some ways running a race, sometimes with nurses who are supporting you and cheering you on, and sometimes really difficult conversations that are kind of the hills, or if you've ever ran near somebody that you didn't like, and you're like, oh my gosh, like, you know, like I had NICU nurses who were smokers and they would hold my baby and I with respiratory care and a fentanyl drip. And I would be like, oh my God, what is happening? So it was a lot. It was a lot to handle at that time.
I love how you're bringing it back before I get a chance to snooze. The marathon metaphor is so true here. I mean, obviously, I'm a NICU mom as well, and I've never thought about it like this. You're right. You've got, you know, it's almost like the distance is so large, right? Like the moment from birth to discharge is so long, you've got to break it down into manageable tasks,
yeah,
for sure. But then you've got these periods where you feel fantastic and everything's going fantastic and your support's around, and then boom, just like that, you feel terrible and you kind of hit a wall and you don't feel like you can go on anymore. And so that would be, for example, like when she's getting the chest tubes or when she's needing to come off of the fentanyl.
Yeah.
Oh, so tough.
And she got 2 procedures while in the NICU. In her first year, she got 5 procedures total. And in her first 2 years, she's gotten 7. So it's a long road even after, but like the NICU prepares you for the worst. I mean, like there's, and I went through a weird period of time. I think Gretchen Rubin talks about this, like some people to be happier in like a time of chaos need to really focus on like the controllables and really simplify their life. And I'm the other version of people who she talks about. So I decided I would take MBA classes at Vanderbilt online and I would try to hit the most aggressive sales goal possible because I had to have something good in every day. So maybe Audrey would have a bad day, but maybe I'd have a good sales day, or maybe I'd get a good grade on my test. And it was a really interesting experience to learn that about myself, that I need to have something good in every day, and that's how I manage stress. But I think that's something that we never really talk about for moms, of like, it's okay to need multiple ways to like get your day or spread yourself in order to be happier. I think a lot of people, I mean, everyone told me, Suze, you have to take care of yourself, make it simple, relax. But I couldn't because, you know, I had 2 phone calls a day that I would get to make to my baby. We had to scale back to only seeing her every other day because it was affecting my milk supply going in the drive. Actually, we had a car breakdown because I was pumping while driving using the like, you know, the cigarette lighter, and it killed the engine. So for a new car. So it was a lot to have happen.
So what I hear you saying is if you know yourself, so, you know, right, the next natural part of this podcast is to be like, well, what advice would you give a NICU parent? But I mean, I'll stop myself there because what I hear you saying is you've got to know yourself. For you, it was helpful to have a win of any type during the day as opposed to simplifying it.
Yes.
And kind of like some people like to know all the information. Like, I know when our kids were in the NICU, I wanted to like, oh, they're going to have this procedure done. I wanted to know everything because that gave me comfort. Whereas my husband did not want to know anything. He wanted to trust God and trust the doctors that were doing God's work, the end. He didn't need to know anything. Yeah. But both of us got comfort in that.
Well, and that's funny because I would tell the doctors, I would say, I need, because they would give me a lot of medical jargon, because some moms do want to know everything and Google everything, and that's fantastic, and they never know what you need. But I would set up a system with them on a 1 to 10 scale, how concerned do I have to be today? And what's the biggest takeaway from this as far as like how I'm supposed to feel or what my next step is? And that was it, because I just couldn't handle the medical jargon. I couldn't put my mind on Googling what was going to come. And from the experience with Grace, I knew that that wasn't helpful for me to like do a deep dive into things that could be troubling you know, and concerning. But, and Chris was the same. Chris was just trusting God. And I mean, like, nothing will bond your marriage more. I guess it could tear it apart, but I'm going to say bond your marriage more than going through the NICU. Because you're like war brothers, like it's like a whole nother element to your relationship to go through that. And like, I wouldn't trade it for the world because of what that experience did for my family, but it was by far one of the most difficult things we've ever had to go through. And then, Audrey was discharged on a feeding tube. She was going to get kicked off of our medical insurance because of the relocation. And we had filled out additional paperwork and done jumped through the hoops, but the time was coming. And she was going to get kicked off of one insurance to go to another, which meant full deductibles for both, which is what families have to do sometimes. And we wanted to make sure that if she was going to get discharged on a feeding tube, that we were prepared and covered and had what we needed. And we had done a lot of feeding therapy in her 88 days in the NICU, but it wasn't looking like she was going to be able to wean off of it. And we didn't want to spend another, they estimated at least 45 plus days to getting her to where she would need to be, because that expense of driving back and forth, that heartbreak of leaving our baby every single time was just too much. So she came home on a feeding tube, on a heart monitor, on an oxygen monitor. She had to be on the feeding tube round the clock. So, my husband had to, not work for a year, to support her care, which was a very big difference for our family as far as just kind of our dynamic. He was not a stay-at-home dad as far as like what his goals were. And, I mean, he does construction. That might be important for people who don't know me to know. Like, he's like a big guy.
You're giving us a lot of things to picture here, Suze. And yeah, I mean, you've asked the construction worker to be a stay-at-home dad with a special needs baby who has a feeding tube and monitors and probably the scariest, like, infant, take care of this infant scenario you could give a guy.
Well, and he probably changed 7 of Grace's diapers in her lifetime. So it's not like having a firstborn set him up for success here. But like the monitors going off in the middle of the night were terrifying. We got a whole new tribe that we didn't necessarily want of therapists, eating therapists, physical therapists. She had to have her vision checked all the time because respiratory care, if you're on it for too long, can cause blindness. Eventually, she had to get ear tubes recently, but she has had hearing issues. So it's really interesting. But, you know, around the same time, just a month before Audrey, one of our best friends who also worked at UD, their brother and sister-in-law had a baby at 26 weeks. And he was up in Pennsylvania. He's at University of Pennsylvania Hospital. And he unfortunately suffered a lot of the worst case scenarios. His mother was lost in the delivery process. He not only needed chest tubes and other things like that, but he also has to deal with blindness and a lot of hearing loss. And so having that very real image of, you know, not necessarily the worst case scenario, but someone who, you know, would give everything they possibly have to be in our shoes was so real. It's so real to see, you know, and there's nothing, I mean, we had some mothers who didn't get to take their babies home ever. And it was really difficult in that regard, but it was also like, you got to know that you're the luckiest human in the world. You just won the lottery. Like, this is a 1.5 million baby, because that's what her medical bills were.
I will say, I want to keep this, you know, focused on your experience with Audrey. The saddest day we ever had in the NICU, we had three NICU babies. They were there for 10 and 12 weeks. The saddest day we ever had was not related to our children at all. It was probably going to have to be edited out. It was when a child had to be taken off of life support, the pod over, and we heard. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Probably going to take that part out. But you're right in that it gives you something to compare to, and you just feel so grateful that God is bringing your child, you know, out of what could be a worst case scenario. So what a blessing.
I mean, we had a lot of signs the entire way that God was with us the whole time. You know, our neighbors were a pastor and a pastor's wife, and they came and prayed with me when we were right before surgery. But the weirdest thing happened in that morning, well before, you know, my doctor's appointments or anything like that. I saw my friend Kathy, whose full name is Catherine, and on our list of baby names, we had Catherine, Maggie, Katie, and then Audrey. And we saw Catherine in the morning. Maggie is my nurse. And then we saw Katie, who's one of my nurses for the longest time. And then we finally met Audrey at delivery. So it came right in order. And then right after, Audrey's name is Kelly, because when I ran my first marathon, which is a weird tie-in, but whatever, I ran it with this woman. And I was like, if we get to the finish line, because we were struggling, like really struggling, I was like, I'll name a baby after you one day, or at least a dog. That was
Wait, this was a woman you just met on the course?
Oh, yeah.
You, like, yeah. Became battle buddies on the course?
We're struggling. It was the Philadelphia Marathon 2008. They make you run up this huge hill, and she was turning 32, and she told her boyfriend she was going to finish that marathon, and he better have a ring for her within a week afterwards, because she was making goals happen. And I fell in love. Like, she was just my, you know, but her name was Kelly. And with our real estate agent, her name is Kelly Martin. And our house, when Chris was closing on it, he, you know, drove the moving truck himself from Atlanta to Chattanooga and then back to see me. The owners of the house owed a lot more money on the house than the bank had seen, because there were two different loans under the same number. So they asked him if he would spend 25 grand more on the house, and we couldn't afford to do that. So the real estate agents put all of their commission in so that we could get our dream house. And her name is Kelly. So it was just weird that it went exactly in the order of the names that we were thinking about for our baby. And we just felt like we were supposed to get that house, because it was against all odds. I mean, like, you know, what real estate agents put in all of their commissions to pay off a man's debt so that you can get your dream house without putting an extra 25 grand on the loan.
Wow. Oh, that is definitely providential. How cool. Yeah. Ah, I love it. Okay. So I want to wrap up. We started talking about marathon running and how it was a metaphor for your journey in the NICU. And I know the race is not done with Audrey, because you continue to manage her health, but for all intents and purposes, she is thriving.
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about what you do for March of Dimes and the NICU in Chattanooga now, currently.
So when Audrey was 6 months old, I ran a marathon or half marathon for the March of Dimes. I'm running another full marathon that I'm training for right now for the March of Dimes. We donate whatever we can, donate till it hurts, to the NICU in Erlanger, which is in Chattanooga. The reason we picked that instead of Northside Hospital, where she was born — Northside's one of the number one hospitals for delivery. They are very well funded. Erlanger is not. They are behind in a lot of different medical advancements. If Audrey was born in Erlanger, her survival would not have been likely. To give you an idea. All of her specialists at Erlanger have told us that. So we are donating a lot to the Erlanger NICU because they need it a little bit more than Atlanta.
How wonderful. I'm going to put in the show notes, folks will just be able to click on details, and then they will see a donate to the cause. And they'll be able to click on that link and see it.
And they can donate just to March of Dimes. That's perfect. They get their funding there.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Suze. Oh, I love it. Okay. Well, I definitely, I guess, just to kind of wrap up here, you know, we're talking about your NICU experience and your time and that kind of thing. What would you have told, you know, the gal checking into that doctor's appointment? Your husband isn't there because you think it's routine. It's 27 weeks. You've got a meeting to get to after this. If you could whisper something in her ear at the beginning of all of this, what would that be?
I think just that it's going to be okay. It's going to be better than okay, because the mother that I became going through this experience is far superior to the mother that I was before it. And I'm so grateful for this experience and the perspective it's given me on health and life and our precious baby. So I just say it's going to be okay.
I love it. Love it. Thank you so much, Suze Lumick, for coming on. We're going to put your details in the show notes, and I appreciate you sharing your NICU experience.
Thank you for having me.
Real talk, you guys. As Suze and I were wrapping up that conversation, she said, "Oh, I hope your audience doesn't mind that I kind of made light of some of that story." And I told her that everyone would totally understand. Sometimes when you're going through those really tough, painful times, it is helpful to have some kind of nugget that can make you smile. Like, your nurses and doctors look like the staff of General Hospital. Suze, we love how colorful you are when it comes to storytelling, and we really appreciate you telling your brave story about the NICU, and love the courageous things that you're doing for the neighboring NICU that really needs it. Thank you so much for coming on. This is definitely a blessing to NICU moms and NICU moms-to-be. Until I get into your earpiece again, remember, for while bodily training is of some value, godliness is of value in every way, as it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. That's from 1 Timothy 4:8, and this has been the Run Lift Mom Podcast. It's time for the Zaya Active item of the week, and this week it is the Effortless Tank. Here's the cool thing about being a part of a small company. We can take customer feedback and make design improvements pretty quickly. And that's exactly what we've done with this summer's Effortless Tank. Two major changes here. One is in the fit. It's going to be a lot more forgiving around your torso and in the middle, and also you down at the bottom and in the rear. It just is more of a modest, sexy look. And then the second thing that we've done is we've added our copper-infused technology to this. This makes the fabric antimicrobial, and it keeps it from stinking after multiple washes. Just click on details. You will see in the show notes, item of the week link. You can go straight to that effortless tank and see what I mean by upgrade. I am beyond excited to announce that Red H Nutrition is an official partner of the Run Lift Mom podcast. I've been a Red H sponsored athlete since November of 2018, which means that I've trained for multiple marathons, 100K trail race, while using these products to supplement my training as well as on race day. And I think that you can take it to the bank. They work. Some of my favorites are Super Greens, Super Flexi, and ZenRem, but you can click on details in the show notes to shop Red H Nutrition and check it out for yourself. Use code RUNLIFTMOM, that's RUNLIFTMOM, just like the name of this show, to save 10%. Again, just click on details in your show notes, shop Red H Nutrition, and then use code RUNLIFTMOM at checkout for 10% off. Thank you for your support of the Run Lift Mom podcast. This is a passion project for me that began in February of 2019 and now has over 10,000 listens.
It's amazing. This is where I uplift other women and create communities around the areas of running, lifting, and motherhood. If you haven't yet done so already, please rate, review, and subscribe. That helps folks find the podcast, and it keeps this passion project going.